Is that what you wrote?
He shrugs. More or less, because I knew what would happen. But it felt phony. Laughing with all my friends later, I almost felt sort of sick inside, and I've never felt that way before around them. You know, fake. So that night at home, I wrote another list and put it in my wallet. It's been there ever since.
Phil slowly unfolds the piece of paper and hands it to me.
Here.
I take the crinkled treasure from his hands and read his chicken scratch writing. 1. Hike along the knife-edge trail to the top of Mount Katahdin. 2. Swim in the Pacific Ocean. 3. Kayak the Colorado River. A tiny lump wells in my throat. I'm quiet.
It's stupid, right?
I shake my head. Is Phil taking my silence as judgment? Not at all, I say in a rush. It's nice. No, that's not the right... I mean, it's beautiful. I stumble for words. I can imagine how difficult it must have been for him to show me this hallowed piece of paper. I hope you get to do it all and much more. I place the paper back in his hand, letting my fingers linger across his palm.
He smiles. 4 was teach Maya to swim.
Liar.
I laugh. Okay, maybe I just added that one, but I'm going to do it.
His eyes meet mine.
You believe me, don't you?
I nod. I don't trust myself to speak.
I like that I can be myself around you.
Phil rolls up a towel and places it on the ground, snug against my thigh. Then he puts the top of his head on my leg, his neck supported by the towel roll. He closes his eyes.
Do you mind?
Not at all. I manage to whisper. I bite my lip. I'm thankful he can't see my face, that his eyes are closed, because I am flushed. Every muscle in my body seems to be screaming, but I am as still as the woods. I watch the rise and fall of his t-shirt. I breathe evenly to relax, to match it. Without a word, Phil reaches out, grazes my fingers, and pulls my hand gently toward his chest. I'm not sure how much time passes. No one else exists. Only us. We sit, hands clasped, until it is time to leave.
She wakes before dawn to say her first prayer. She's always loved the ritual, starting off the day with a devotion to God. Sitting on the prayer rug with her legs curled beneath her, as the thread of dawn appears against the horizon. This is the moment when she feels most at peace, before she makes breakfast for her husband, before they drive together to their small grocery store, before the shop fills with the cacophony of women searching for fava beans, cumin, apricots, dried lentils, rose water, pistachios, cardamom, pickled eggplants, and vinegar. Even after many years in this country, some still try to haggle as if they are in the bazaar back home. She pushes the complaints from her mind. In a few days, she will be the one preparing the feast. Kamal comes home, and there will be reason to celebrate. He will drive the entire way, 7 hours, from Springfield to Dearborn. She worries the drive will be too tiring for him, that he will eat too much fast food on the way and not be hungry for dinner. Ma, I am always hungry for your cooking, he assures her. More and more, he sounds like an American. But at least he knows how to show his mother proper respect. Chapter 9.
Friday.
The last day of break. My last day with Phil before school starts again on Monday. When we return to the respective corners of our social cliques. Soon enough, these lovely last days of swimming in cool water under a bright blue sky will fade from our memories like a pastel drawing left in the sun. But today is perfect. Phil runs into the pond ahead of me. I step forward, my usual hesitation giving way to a tiny spark of confidence. I secure my goggles, check the waterproof bandage on my leg, and swim 6 remarkably even strokes to reach Phil. Swimming. Me. In water. I'm not exactly giving Katie Ledecky a run for her money. Still, I did a thing I was scared to do. But there's no way I could have done it without Phil.
You're swimming. For real.
He's standing in the water, arms crossed, beaming at me as I come up from the water. It was only a few strokes.
In the next couple hours, you'll be swimming laps.
Thanks to you.
It's the only thing I could teach you. You're better than me at everything else.
You're forgetting wilderness first aid and avoiding bear attacks. I almost add, and football, but decide against it. Both are way more practical than dissecting literary symbolism.
Probably not in New York City.
Phil turns to swim the length of the pond. I follow him in and try to remember to move my arms and legs in harmony with my breath. Slow but steady. I swallow a few mouthfuls of water and lose count of my strokes and mess up my breathing. But I don't panic. I right myself. When I start shivering, I step out of the water, grab my towel, and sit on our beach so I can warm up in the sun. I film Phil as he swims, capturing his grace, how his smooth strokes barely ripple the surface. I need to cinematize this, all of this. I'll want proof later. I'll need to know this isn't all the land of make-believe.
So what exactly are you going to do with all this stuff you're filming? I'm asking because if you're putting it on the internet, I want to make sure the clip goes viral.
Phil joins me on the blanket. I grin. Nothing like that. It's the documentary of my life, with an audience of one, me. One day, when I'm old and gray, my Mac hard drive will be my memory, along with my dozens of backups.
Worried your computer's gonna crash?
Afraid I'll forget how I see the world.
What do you mean?
Filming is the way I see things. Really see them. I can capture what is important to me at a particular moment. That way I keep it forever.
Nothing lasts forever.
I shrug. Movies can remind us of who we are or were, show us what we can be. What would the Lumiere brothers think if they could walk into a theater today?
The what brothers?
He asks with a smile. Lumiere. These French guys who basically invented movies. They made the camera and showed the first film, a bunch of people exiting a train station. My voice trails off. He's staring at me. What?
Your face lights up when you talk about the movies.
He's right about that, literally, because I sense the blushing coming on. Of course. I avoid his gaze, looking down at the camera at my side. Movies are the only real magic that I can make, I say. He catches my eye. He opens his mouth to say something, then pauses, clears his throat.
So I guess you will be telling your folks about NYU.
I chuckle miserably. This weekend, as long as I don't lose my nerve.
I asked my aunt to come and be moral support or rescue me in case my parents try to ship me to India and marry me off to a distant cousin.
Why are they so against you going away for school anyway?
I guess they're nervous to send me away because they can't keep an eye on me. In India, plenty of women live at home until they get married. But things are changing there, too. But my parents are frozen in the past, in the India of their youth. He nods.
My parents are frozen in the past, too, in a way. Batavia's past.
I get it. Batavia is so small. I wonder if we will ever be alone like this again. Phil and I have known each other since we were 5 years old, but I've never truly known him beyond the obvious, beyond what the world knows. That he plays football, dates Lisa, and works for his dad at the station. And that he's good-looking. Really good-looking. Perhaps beyond this pond, we'll go back to the way we were, unknowable to each other. We can only exist together here in our little mise-en-scene at the end of the path, the setting of our own documentary short. Phil interrupts my thoughts.
I know what you should call it.
Call what? I ask.
The movie that you're going to make about your swimming lessons. Hidden Beach, he says.
But I wrinkle my nose.
No? How about Stolen Beach? Stolen Water? No, wait. Stolen Spring? Stolen Spring. Get it?
I shrug and give Phil a little grin, waiting for him to explain.
Well, it's spring right now, and we've, like, stolen this place for ourselves.
Phil is on a roll.
I can imagine the trailer now.
He tries the cadence of a movie voiceover.
It's senior year. She's a beautiful budding filmmaker. He can swim and fix cars. They don't know where the path beyond the stone cottage will lead.
I blink. You think... I'm... My voice is a whisper. I can't say the word. I'm afraid to.
What?
Nothing. Your trailer sounds like it could be a horror movie, or maybe... You're not going to get all sparkly in the sunlight and confess to being a vampire, are you? There's a hint of teasing in my voice. Phil smirks.
We don't know how it's going to end yet, do we?
He stares into my eyes as my chest rises and falls. He leans toward me. My heartbeat echoes through the trees. His face inches closer. I will our lips to meet. I want to wrap my arms around him and press my mouth to his, but my body hesitates. Phil plucks a little leaf from my wet hair and shows it to me.
It was stuck, he says.
His arms slacken. He rises awkwardly and reaches for his t-shirt. The spell is broken.
I gotta get going. If I'm late for work, my brother will kick my ass.
Suddenly, there's a dark storm inside me. I snatch my things. I'm not sure what happened right now. It felt natural, like the moment in a movie when the guy and girl who've been kept apart finally kiss under the moonlight or in an airport or on a crowded street or by a secret pond. Maybe I imagined it all because the difference is the guy and the girl in that Hollywood movie have fate on their side. In the bleak indie movies, they don't get the happy ending. They get a tragedy. They get Romeo and Juliet. And the Muslim? The Indian? That girl. She doesn't even get the dream of the football captain. She gets a lifetime of being stopped by the FAA for random bag searches every time she flies. She gets the nice boy, the sensible boy,
the one her parents approve of, and who she will grow to love over years, and children, and necessity. We walk down the path to the car. I glance back to steal a final look at our little beach and the pond, and then hurry through the trees beyond the cottage. I don't say a word. Leaves and twigs crunch underfoot. I wish I were home already, or at the bookstore, rearranging the shelves. Anywhere but here, next to Phil and this painful reminder of everything that I can't have. When we pass the Japanese garden, Phil finally speaks.
Sorry we had to pack up early today. I promised.
No problem. My voice is clipped. I walk faster, moving past Phil, to try and save myself from the humiliation that builds with each second we're together. I climb into the passenger seat and slam the door. I sit with my arms crossed over my chest, my lips in a tight line. This moment is so cruel. For a second, I forget myself. All I want is to be the normal girl, with parents who let her date and a house that smells of seasonally appropriate candles and not fried onions. I slink back in the car seat. I know I can wish for life to be different. I can click my heels and hope I'm somewhere else. But in the end, I'm here. I'm me. We're still a couple blocks from my house when Phil pulls the car over. He turns off the ignition. On any other day, my hands would get clammy and my heart would pound. Right now, I just feel sick. "Do you want me to get out here?" I ask, a raw edge in my voice.
"Tell me what's wrong."
"Nothing." I stare out the windshield.
"You're not a very good liar."
"I'm better than you know."
"Why won't you talk to me?"
I sigh, loudly. "Phil, please take me home." My eyes burn. I blink rapidly. I'm on the verge of tears. I need to get out of his car.
"Maya."
Phil whispers my name and takes my limp left hand in his. It might as well be a phantom limb. I'm a shadow.
"I'm sorry."
I turn away. I have to, otherwise I will burst into ugly sobs. I bite the inside of my cheek. "You don't have to apologize. Please. I want to go home." A few tears roll down my face. I brush them away with the back of my free hand. My shoulders droop. The air in the car is too heavy to breathe.
"I'm sorry. Please don't cry."
I try to clear away the lump in my throat to compose myself. "No worries. You're going to be late for work if you don't get going."
"It's only the timing of all this. I shouldn't have."
He clenches the steering wheel. His veins pop up against his skin. He opens his mouth as if he wants to form words, but has forgotten how. I want to put him out of his misery, so I touch his forearm, barely graze it, and steady my voice. "It's okay. I understand." I open the door. "Look, I'm going to walk the two blocks home." He takes my forearm and draws me back.
"You don't understand."
"Trust me, I do. I know who I am, and I know who you are. Thanks for the swimming lessons. We're even. See you Monday." Phil won't let go.
"Look, I want you to know that I meant what I said back at the pond. You are... I think..."
He can't say it. He can't bring himself to say anything, really. So why am I still here? I pull my arm away and slam the car door.
I hurry down the block while my held-back torrent of tears splashes down my face. I'm glad Phil can't see me. I race home, hoping no one notices the bawling brown girl with a tangled mess of wet hair. I rush inside and run to my room. Thankfully, I'm alone. I throw myself onto the bed and cry into my pillow, huge, heaving sobs. The camera in my brain lets me run all the scenes of my life in slow motion. I freeze frame every time Phil touched me. The perfect afternoon when he held my hand. The impossible instant when his face hovered inches above mine. He could have kissed me, but didn't. He couldn't even bring himself to say any words, express a single emotion. And there's Lisa. How I envy her. I'm angry with Lisa, even though none of this is her fault. She's out of town with her family, blissfully unaware of all the time Phil and I have spent together, completely ignorant to the split second when time froze, when I was sure we were going to kiss. I try to squeeze Lisa's face out of my mind, but it's impossible. On Monday, Lisa and Phil will be holding hands, walking down Senior Hall, the inevitable king and queen of prom. And I'll be spending prom night watching old movies with my aunt. I'm an idiot for believing my fantasy could be real. I should know better. I'm a documentarian. It's not a John Hughes movie. It's my so-called life. Officer Evans drives his squad car up 6th Street and takes a left turn on Adams. His partner called in sick, so he's out solo today. His patrol started at 5 a.m. The morning was quiet. He got an early lunch, stayed a bit longer than usual at the counter of Kelly's Diner. A cheeseburger, medium well, with the works. A side of fries and a cup of black coffee. Same thing every time. It was a ritual, one of the few, he was going to miss in retirement. 6 more months. Kelly jokes she might have to make his usual the creature of habit special and send it to him long distance, because in 6 months and one day, he and Anne will head to a Florida 55-plus retirement community for their active adult years. Their two-bedroom condo is all picked out, halfway between Orlando and Tampa, perfect for a visit from the grandkids. But the best part will be the end of Illinois winters. When he was a younger man, the freezing temperatures and piles of snow hadn't bothered him so much, but last winter was too brutal. He decided it was the last winter they would spend in Springfield. Cruising down Adams, he reminds himself to circle around the old state capitol. He wants to check on a white truck that was parked at 5th Street in a 30-minute zone. Chapter 10. Can't wait to see you, babe. I sit on the edge of my bed and stare at Kareem's text. I want to crawl back under the covers. I'm about to break it off with a sweet romantic guy I've kissed because I'm stitching my heart back together over a taken guy who has no desire to kiss me. Maybe this will become the pattern of my life. Every story ends before it has a chance to begin. Not exactly riveting material for a documentary. My mom yells up from the kitchen, crashing my self-pity party.
Maya? Kareem and his parents will be here in half an hour. Get up!
Down in a minute! At least the day won't be a total loss, because I can smell the parathas that my mother is making for Indian brunch. The layered, flaky flatbread is my absolute favorite. I love plucking them from the tava, the cast-iron pan my mom reserves for this specialty, with a little pat of butter. Total food heaven. Making them also takes effort, so I know she's trying to impress Kareem's family,
even though I overheard her assuring Salma Auntie that she was only preparing a simple home meal. I smell onions caramelizing, too.
Mom, are you making keema paratas?
I call down, hungry. My mouth waters for paratas stuffed with spicy ground beef. This is one of the great ironies of my life. I love Indian food, but not the days-old lingering smell of onions and garlic on my clothes. But when you love something, you have to be prepared to make sacrifices.
If you get up, you can see for yourself,
my mom calls. With a groan, I pull myself off the bed. I shower and change, swipe on a little blush and mascara. I take care to dress appropriately, modest but with a little flair. Skinny jeans and an emerald green silk Indian tunic that hangs untucked, covering my ass, with simple yellow embroidery around the neckline. Small gold hoops in my ears, and a thin chain with a delicate gold khamsa, the hand of Fatima, resting in the notch above my collarbone. This outfit so wins the Indian mom's seal of approval.
You look so pretty, Beta,
Mom proclaims as I walk into the kitchen. She's standing at the stove making keema paratas as I'd hoped. The table is covered with steaming bowls of food.
Look, Asif, she's wearing makeup too.
Oh-ho, smashing.
My dad nods in approval.
You're supposed to say I don't need makeup.
Are, can't I simply compliment my daughter without it becoming a federal case?
My mom turns to my dad and nods toward the cabinets, her silent way of asking him to set the dining table with a good china.
I thought this was supposed to be no big deal, I say.
Who's saying it's a big deal?
My mother asks with a shrug.
You're wearing one of your favorite shalwar kameez and the necklace you wore to Aisha's wedding.
Don't be ridiculous. I would never repeat necklaces so close together. That one had the rupees in it. This one just has a few emeralds.
Of course, because emeralds totally scream casual brunch.
Maya Beta, remember when you invite someone, as the host, you must make them feel welcome and appreciated. In India, a guest is like a god in the house. You need to treat them with the proper tamiz.
It's all part of the show, of course. She wants to prove that I'm a nice Indian girl from a good family. As if we should have to prove that. But more, she wants the day to be perfect. For a second, I'm sorry it won't be. For her.
The house looks good. The food is ready. I'm going to make a few more paratas, and let me start the tea. I wanted to sleep a good long time.
She's right. The house does look good. From the outside looking in, everything is as it should be. Too bad that facade is destined to crumble. The doorbell rings at exactly 10:30.
They're not on Indian Standard Time, I guess,
my dad jokes as he walks to the door. I muster a smile.
Yeah, somehow they've adapted to the strange American custom of arriving when asked.
I follow him to the door. My mom trails behind me. My mouth is dry. I realize I actually want to see Kareem. I thought I was going to totally dread this moment, breaking things off. But he's impossible not to like. I do like him. Just not enough, or in the right way.
Assalamu alaikum. Come in, come in. Welcome, welcome.
Kareem hands my mom flowers. I mouth the words ass-kisser at him from behind my mom's back. He smirks but keeps his eyes on my mother. My mom thanks him effusively, going on and on about how he shouldn't have, and congratulating his parents on raising such a wonderful son. In spite of all the food, I can't wait to eat. I suddenly have no appetite. All this gushing adds to the myth of Kareem in my mother's matrimonial fancy. The suitable boy, the boy with tamiz, the one boy to rule them all. But I'm also being as unfair to him as I'm being to her. He thinks we're something that we're not. Kareem and his parents slip off their shoes in the foyer. His mom is also wearing a shalwar kameez with beautiful floral embroidery, accented with gold jewelry. She's not as decked out as my mom, but then she's the guy's mom, and it's always the girl's mom who is more invested, has more to lose. Because they see guys, especially ones as eligible as Kareem, always seem to have more options. My mom guides Kareem's parents into the living room, her voice brighter and more sing-song than usual.
The food is nearly ready. It's nothing much. Home cooking, you know.
Maybe we should put those flowers in water?
My dad suggests, louder and with more emphasis on the we than necessary.
Yes, yes. Salma, can you please help me select the vase?
My mom flashes my dad an eye smile.
Of course!
Salma Auntie plays along.
And I must see what you've cooked. It smells heavenly.
Sajid, let me show you a few recent improvements I've made to the cabinets.
My dad gestures to the kitchen. All four adults vanish. And scene. Kareem and I are alone. I turn to Kareem, hoping my cheeks aren't pink. Not obvious at all.
They're so smooth, aren't they?
Kareem laughs and steps closer to me. I scratch a non-existent itch on my forehead. I am hyper-aware of my own breathing. But my hand doesn't pose enough of an obstacle. He moves it gently aside and bends down to kiss me. I hop back, shaking free.
Have you lost it?
I loud whisper. My parents are hidden behind the kitchen wall, voices chattering, dishes clattering, but I'm pretty certain my mom has X-ray vision. He gives me a puzzled smile.
We're alone. They want us to be alone.
Not alone. They're 15 feet away. Believe me, my parents would not be cool with kissing under their roof, or anywhere else for that matter. Even if you are Muslim and Indian and an engineering major and bursting with tamiz. Kareem shrugs.
Well then, I'll just have to figure out a way to get you alone. Really alone.
I look into Kareem's dark, flirtatious eyes and remember why I liked him in the first place. I wish this day were already over. I wish my feelings were different, but they aren't. Our mothers appear with two heaping plates of food and two mango lassis. My mom smiles a little too brightly as she hands a plate and glass off to me. Salma Auntie hands hers to Kareem.
Maya, it's such a beautiful day. Why don't you show Kareem outside?
Excellent idea, Salma Auntie says before I can answer. I think I saw a picnic table out there.
She winks at my mom as if neither Kareem nor I are present. The day is beautiful, so there's no point in protesting. I lead Kareem out through the screen door into the yard, past my old wooden swing set. My parents insist on keeping it for posterity. To the weathered red picnic table underneath the weeping willow in the corner. On the plus side, the wide trunk and drooping branches completely shield us from the prying eyes of our parents.
Alone at last, Kareem says, as we sit across from each other.
He reaches over the table to stroke my arm. My dad painted the shed so it would look like a little barn. It's the symbol of his American dream.
Every lawn cutting, hedge trimming, barbecuing suburban dad device is in that shed. He's totally obsessed with Home Depot. I speak a mile a minute. My words are garbled. They bang and smash into each other. Kareem smiles at me. I catch my breath for a second. He loves gadgets. He probably has gadgets that are supposed to make ice cream while they reseed the lawn. You should eat your food before it gets cold. My mom makes the best keema parathas. Seriously. I tear off a section of the buttery warm bread, dip it in the chutney, and stuff my mouth while gesturing for Kareem to do the same. I want to make sure my mouth is full in case Kareem tries to ask me any questions. Kareem sits back in his chair and smiles.
So, tomorrow is the big NYU reveal. I think it's awesome. You're carpeing your diem.
I look up from my plate. I try to smile, but I'm afraid it comes off like a grimace. Yep, I'll be sucking the marrow out of life. Probably sucking hard. I'm not surprised he brings it up. We've already talked about how I was dreading today. Of course, he doesn't realize I have more than one truth to tell this weekend. Kareem laughs.
Is this the appropriate time for a Nihari joke?
Ugh, it's never an appropriate time for a Nihari joke. I had nightmares about sucking out the marrow from those bones.
What? Are you not a real Hyderabadi? Nihari is delicious.
Of course you loved it. That's why you're such a Thoreau pusher. You are what you eat.
You'll be fine. Tell them straight up.
I was considering using the stomp my feet and hold my breath technique. It proved highly effective when I was little.
By any means necessary?
Whatever gets me to New York.
Do you want me to put in a good word for you?
Kareem offers between bites of paratha.
I mean, I'm going to school in New Jersey, and I haven't turned into my parents' worst nightmare or anything.
When I look at Kareem's bright eyes, my hard candy coating gives way to my gooey inside. But it isn't attraction. It's because I feel sorry for what I'm about to do. I know Kareem is sincere, and in this moment, I wish my heart would pound for him like it does for Phil. Life would be so much easier. I know that he's a lot more than the suitable boy trifecta, Indian, Muslim, and from a good family, but I can't fake it. My mind time travels to a future that will never happen, an alternate universe where I'm in love with Kareem. There are afternoons on the couch watching old Satyajit Rai movies, stuffing our faces with samosas. We share an unspoken understanding. Two people from similar backgrounds raised in similar ways in America. I will never have to explain so many basic things to him. Explain why every adult is called auntie or uncle, despite familial link, a sign of respect. Why we always take off our shoes at the vestibule. We pray in the house, so the home is holy. Or why the major Muslim holidays are on different days every year. Islam follows a lunar calendar. There will be a big wedding, where Kareem rides in on a white horse, and I will be garlanded in gold and roses and jasmine. It's beautiful and perfect, but I can't fool myself. I don't want it. My heart belongs to Phil, even if his heart belongs to Lisa.
Still there?
Kareem interrupts my Walter Mitty moment. I take a deep breath, firmly seize one end of the imaginary bandage. Carpe diem. Kareem? We need to talk. He straightens in his seat. His smile falters.
This can't be good.
I look down at the table and then up past Kareem. My voice breaks. I'm sorry. I don't know how to tell you this without sounding horrible. I don't like you the way you like me. It's not because of anything you...
Do not say, it's not you, it's me.
He interrupts, but his tone is gentle.
That is too much of a cliché.
But it's true. You've been so nice, and I enjoy talking to you, and I don't want to hurt you. The words catch in my throat, and tears well in my eyes. I'm sorry. I know I should like you, but it's that... Kareem half laughs.
Maya, you can't force yourself to be into someone. And we've only been on one date, so I get it. It's not working for you. Plus, you know, I'd like to be adored for who I am.
Why does he have to be so kind? Can't he see that he's just making it harder on me? I swallow hard. Of course. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I was forcing myself. God, I'm doing a terrible job at this. I want to explain. I want to run away, but there is no place to go where I won't find myself. Kareem stands up and walks over to my side of the table. He sits and puts his arm around me and draws me close to him. I sob into his chest. He caresses my hair and kisses the top of my head. I don't deserve this kind of understanding, but I am grateful for it. I'm sorry, I whisper.
It's okay, Maya. As big as my ego is, this actually does seem to be about you and not me.
I wipe away the salt and tears and mascara that ran down my face. Oh, my God. I must look awesome right now.
You totally rock the raccoon eyes. Now, what's bothering you?
I sigh deeply. I want to tell him. Still, it is infinitely strange to talk to a guy you've made out with about a guy you want to make out with. But right now, at this picnic table, with his arms still protectively around me, Kareem doesn't feel like the former. He is the big brother who'd fight off the schoolyard bully for me. So it comes tumbling out, the whole Phil story, the tutoring sessions and the pond and the cottage and almost kissing, and Lisa and the anger. I tell him what I took forever to admit to myself, that Phil was my first real crush, that we've known each other forever, and it's only now that I've realized that maybe, just maybe, Phil has been noticing me, too. Phil and I are totally different, but at the core, we share something that made the pond our little self-contained universe. And it was almost enough. I take a deep breath. It's all such a mess. I don't know how I let myself fall for Phil.
You can't help who you love,
Kareem says, totally matter-of-fact. I stiffen at the mention of the L word. Love?
Hate to break it to you, but that's kinda what it sounds like.
I was afraid that's what it was.
It's not outside of you. It's a part of who you are, not an object you can film and capture in different kinds of light. It's love. If it wasn't real, it wouldn't hurt.
But I don't want this. I don't want to be in love with him. I mean, we can never be together and I'll end up...
Broken-hearted? You'll get over it.
He laughs softly.
Believe it or not, Maya, there are a few people who once felt exactly like you do right now.
Like their bodies are ripping apart.
Like the world is crumbling and their souls are being crushed.
Looking forward to the soul-crushing, I manage a grin.
It isn't a consolation, but I'd put the number at around 1 billion. And that's just today. I'm not counting all of human history. Plenty of other people have survived heartbreak. Believe me, I know. And that's why I know you'll be fine. You're graduating from high school. There are going to be plenty of other guys out there waiting.
To rip my heart out?
He pulls back and tilts my chin up so we're face to face.
No. Waiting for a girl like you. And from what you've told me, I'd say you're wrong about Phil. He seems into you.
I'm at a loss.
You think so?
Kareem lets my chin go and takes my left hand in his.
Let me give you the guy's version of the situation. Phil likes you. He could have spent spring break having sex with his girlfriend, but instead he spent a week with you, where the main action was 5 minutes of G-rated hand-holding. Obviously, he's got to break up with her, but he's scared. You might have heard this before, but guys aren't always the best communicators.
You're pretty good at it.
Yes, Kareem says, then leans back with both hands behind his head. I am rather great, aren't I?
We burst out laughing. Then Kareem gets serious for a second.
It gets better, Maya. Even if the world seems to be crashing all around you right now.
I sniff and nod. Cue Bollywood dance number. He nods back, matching my smile.
At any moment, dancers will unfurl from the tops of the willow's boughs, lip-syncing a reminder that the sun will shine again.
I start to shake my head no, but the thing about what Kareem says is, right now, the sun is, in fact, shining. I'm not trapped. I'm still living in the world of the possible, and I actually have the power to make the possible real.
So what are we going to tell our parents? I'm pretty sure my mom already has the wedding invitations picked out.
I ask because my mom's disappointment isn't merely possible, it's assured.
Really?
Kareem says dryly.
I hadn't detected that enthusiasm behind her effusive welcome. Simple is best and most believable. We want to be friends. Boom. Done.
Wow. I'm speechless. He winks at me.
Great communicators like me have that effect on most women.
I have to laugh again. Thank you for being so you. You're amazing at it. I dab at my eyes with a napkin. Do I look all blubbery?
You look beautiful. Now shall we?
Kareem stands up and stacks the cups and plates to carry inside. I find myself floating off again to another possible future, where Kareem is getting married, but I am not the bride. I think of how that mystery woman will have Kareem's caring arms around her, and how he will gently kiss her lips and stroke her hair. For a moment, I'm jealous of a future that another girl will have with the guy I rejected. I sigh. Apparently, getting what you want still comes at a price. The car idles. He runs his fingers rhythmically over the indentation on the back of his head, buckle and scar. His body sways gently, almost imperceptibly, back and forth, buckle and scar. His mind slips to last fall and a writing course at the local community college. He was filled with something vaguely resembling hope when he walked in and spotted a pretty brown-haired girl in the third row with an empty seat next to her. He took a few hesitant steps toward her. When he reached down to pull back the empty seat, a hand grasped his shoulder from behind and pushed him aside. Don't even think about it, loser. For the rest of the class, he sat in the back row, staring at the smiling couple, seething.
Chapter 11.
Phil's smiling face fills my computer screen, but all I see is his luscious dimple.
I've been rough-cutting shots all morning to create a montage of the time Phil and I spent together. One image of Phil fades into another. The ambient light in the shots shifts and casts shadows across his brow, his cheekbones, his lips. I'm trying to convince myself that I'm searching for the best shots, empirically speaking, but I'm not. I'm searching for his smile, not just any one. The smile I'm sure is meant only for me. The smile that will prove Kareem was right about Phil liking me for real. This is pathetic, I say out loud, pushing back from my computer. When I walk into the kitchen, my aunt is at the table sipping chai, and my mom is at the stove cooking. I didn't hear you come in, I say, happy to see Hina. Inviting her over as moral support was probably the best decision I've made in weeks. My resolve is bolstered just by her presence. Your ummi said you were working on a movie, so I didn't want to interrupt, but I'm dying to hear about the brunch with Kareem and his parents. My mom starts aggressively stirring the pot in front of her. She doesn't acknowledge Hina's question, but she heard it. I slink into the chair across from Hina, who gives me a little shrug. I sigh. Kareem and I are just going to be friends. I mean, he really considers me a little sister. It's sweet. I'm trying to sound as chipper as possible. My mom still isn't looking at us, so I open my eyes wide and gesture at Hina to go along. When she gives me a silent, ah, and nods, I know she gets me. "Hint, little sister," my mom mutters under her breath and keeps stirring. "Well, that's good, no?" Hina asks, trying to sound upbeat. "I mean, it's always good to have family, and since he's in college, I'm sure he's going to be a great source of advice." "Exactly," I say. "I'm sure..." My mom whips around, waving the wooden spoon in her hand like she's preparing for battle. "You're not sure of anything. That's why you are throwing poor Kareem on some ash heap before he even had a chance." "I'm not throwing anyone anywhere. Seriously, Mom? It's not like I'm breaking off an engagement." It's absurd. The thing is, Mom hasn't even reached peak melodrama yet. "You should be so lucky as to get engaged," she says. She's getting there. "What? I can't believe..." Hina steps in. "Come on now, Appa." I'm pretty sure she can see that I'm about to erupt. "You didn't really expect Maya to get engaged. She's not even 18 yet. She has to focus on her studies." My mom takes a breath and lowers the spoon. "Of course, we want Maya to finish school before getting married, but, you know, it can't hurt to have someone in mind." I open my mouth to say something, but Hina nudges me under the table, so I bite my lip and keep my sarcastic remarks to myself. This is not today's battle. "Don't worry, Appa. Maya is quite the catch. I'm sure she will have no problem finding eligible suitors when the time comes." "Of course she's a catch. She's my daughter, isn't she?" My mom turns back to the stove, pleased with her retort. I see her shoulders relax. The Hina effect. My dad enters the kitchen, which is good. If he even sniffs a discussion about something emotional or feminine, he hightails it out of there.
"Buddy, I'm getting hungry."
He sidles up to my mom and puts an arm around her shoulders. I sit on my hands, a shift in my seat. Even this G-rated eyeful of parental affection makes me uncomfortable. Hina swoops in to the rescue. "Maya and I will take these dishes into the dining room, and you can bring the rest when you're done. Okay, Appa?" "Two more minutes," my mom says, and gestures to my dad to get water glasses from the cupboard. Hina and I take out the dal, kebabs, and rice,
and sit at the table. I take a few breaths, savoring the calm. We'd just sidestepped one argument, so we could dive into an even bigger one.
"So you have a plan, right?" Hina asks in a whisper.
"Yes. You tell them I got into NYU while I cower in a corner." Hina laughs.
"God, I'm not that brave. Be firm and let them know it's what you want. Tag me in as necessary."
"I'm going to carpe this diem," I say, and for an instant I imagine Kareem nodding his approval. My parents join us in the dining room, carrying in the remaining dishes. They take a seat, and my mom fills our plates. "Oh, I forgot the naan," she says, slapping her palm to her forehead. "Let me go heat."
"John, it's okay."
My dad takes my mom's wrist, gently pulling her back to the table and her seat.
"Let's all sit down and have a nice, peaceful family lunch."
I catch Hina's eyes. No time like the present. "Dad?" I ask, inflection rising. "This might not be the peaceful family lunch you hoped for." "Why?" my mom asks, panic tinging her voice. "What happened? What's wrong?"
"Appa, there's nothing wrong. Let Maya explain," Hina says.
I gulp. This is happening right now. "Mom? Dad? You know how I love making movies?"
"It's a very nice hobby," my father says.
His tone is firm.
"We are all looking forward to the movie of Aisha's wedding."
"It's more than a hobby." My voice falters. I look from my dad to my mom. I take a deep breath. I straighten my shoulders and sit up in my seat. If I don't sound convincing to myself, they definitely aren't going to buy anything I have to say. I clear my throat. "I want to make movies. Forever. As a career. I want to study film in school." My parents stare at me like they are looking into an abyss, searching for light. "You know how I got into Northwestern and U of C?"
"Two excellent schools where you can study to become a lawyer."
My dad's voice is firmer now. Flatter, too. Well, I sort of also applied to NYU and got in. Dad drops his silverware.
"Sort of?"
"Not sort of. I applied to NYU. I was accepted."
"NYU?"
my mom repeats. "Uh-huh. Yes. NYU. New York University."
"But that's in..."
She turns to my dad. "Yes, Mom, it's in New York. That's why it's called New York University." Wrong moment for sarcasm.
"Maya?"
My dad's tone is sharp.
"Watch how you talk to your mother. So what you're telling us is that you applied to this school behind our backs and you got in, and now you expect us to let you go there?"
My mom shakes her head. Her expression is both less angry and more puzzled than his.
"Maya, you're not going to NYU. The answer is simple. No. It's too far. We agreed that you would be staying close to home."
I feel a little prickle of anger. "No, Mom. You and Dad agreed. Not me. I want to go to NYU. It's one of the best film schools in the country. They say my films show a lot of promise, and they have amazing professors, and it's only 2 hours by plane. And I know it's more expensive than U of C, but I promise I'll work extra hours at the Idol to save money, and even get a job in New York to make up some of the difference." My parents start talking to each other in Urdu, the primary and personal language they share. Anytime the topic veers towards something serious or emotional, especially anger, they revert to Urdu. I get it. It's familiar, the language they grew up with and met each other in. I can keep